with someone you love.
They are the very essence of my soul.
I breathe them in every day just to live.
The Eclectic Artist Cave, live Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on The Shark. Swim for your life.
Shark Radio Network.
Hey, this is Big Easy, Eric Shelfis, host of Sports Talk Soup and View from the Edge. You're listening to The Mallard Report with Jim Mallard. Quack, quack on Shark Radio Network.
Hi, gang. It's Moo from the Mighty Variety Show here on the Shark Radio Network on Friday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern. I was wondering if you'd take a moment to go visit www.mallard.com, M-A-L-L-I-A-R-D.com. If you have any questions or information for Jim, you can email them to mallardreport@gmail.com, mallardreport@gmail.com. Thanks, guys, and have a great day.
Hey, everybody, it's the Mallard Report.
If it's Tuesday and you're on Shark Radio Network, that must be where you find me. How are you doing, everybody? It's Jim Mallard of the Mallard Report here on the Shark Radio Network. Hopefully everybody is coming through loud and clear tonight. I've been dealing with some technical mixer fun stuff for some non-apparent reason to me tonight. But as always, it's the beauty of live radio. Love it, can't hate it, it is what it is. But having said all that, I'm going to bring my guest up and we're just going to roll with it. Or just roll with it, because that's the show that I host on Sunday night. So, let's see how Mr. John C. Fowler's evening is going here in a second, before I totally ruin it. Hi, John, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Jim. How you doing?
Doing pretty good, and then I noticed my mixer battery light was blinking low battery, and I went through three of them over there, and it kept blinking low battery at me, so I might have a problem otherwise than low battery.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good.
So, but my levels are okay, so I'm just going to roll with it until somebody says I can't hear you, so.
Sounds good to me, so.
So how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. Just been a
besides busy.
Yeah, busy week, to say the least here. I got a public reveal coming up on Thursday that's just taking a lot of my time, besides obviously our full-time jobs, which, as you know, can be a hindrance to our paranormal activities.
Yes, they can.
But it's all in good fun, though. I'm hoping this event actually is the first time we've ever done a public reveal, so got a lot of roadblocks to overcome.
Well, tell us a little bit about the investigation plate. Where was it at? And I guess I don't want to reveal what you found, but obviously, you found something that you wanted to do a reveal with, so I guess I can assume that, right?
Yeah, it's one of those deals where we met the owner. I had heard stories before. It's Old Bethlehem Road Hotel in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. We heard some stories and went to investigate it. The owner was more than willing to do that. We did one investigation, found some questionable things that made us just want to come back and, you know, see, was that just a, you know, a random noise that sounded like an EVP, or was it something else? We came back and got some interesting stuff and decided to do a public reveal. Right.
Interesting. Because often I love those teams that go for a place once for about 4 hours and they send them the certificate that says it was haunted.
Yeah, I'm not one to say anything's haunted. You almost have to have something dramatic happen for me to say a place is haunted, to say the least.
I would never say a place is haunted, because if I say, okay, let's take my house just as a XYZ example. Mm-hmm. I put the certificate on the front door, and I say, my house is haunted. And you say, hey, I'm a paranormal investigator. Can I investigate your house? Sure, it's haunted. And you come in here with all your equipment and spend two, three nights You send me a message a week or a couple of weeks later and says, dude, I didn't get anything from the two or three nights that I investigated there. How can you call that house haunted?
Exactly. I believe that you should be able to actually show something for the most part every time you come out to have a place labeled as haunted. But even then, that's not a given. It'd be nice, you know, if you get something every time you go out, but we both know that's just not the way it happens 99% of the time.
I was going to say, it seems more and more recently, the last handful of investigations that I've went on, they made me listen to a couple EVPs, but EVPs are not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like tone deaf, I guess. Frequency deaf, I don't know how to describe it, but maybe it's from doing this radio show. Anyway.
You never know.
Maybe that's a good thing for... Oh. Maybe I just found one plus to doing a radio show. These headphones. Now, I never have actually. It's just never been my cup of tea. I'll look at video and do all that, but EVPs, it's just like pouring right through me. I don't.
That's funny. I'm the exact opposite. I love the audio end, and the video end kills me. So everybody's got their specialties. They kind of just pick up, I guess, along the way.
It just becomes natural. There's something that draws you more than the other, or you just, in my case, just waste 6 hours, and they'll be like, didn't you hear that one at 1:14? Why are you still going? I'm like, nope.
Yeah, I know one of the members of my group, he loves doing audio, but his hearing is not the best, so he ends up getting stuck with the DVR work, which to me is just like a death sentence. Static picture for X hours.
So, okay, let's talk about the Midnight Watchman, right?
Is that
the proper name? Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, because my team goes by Meadville Paranormal, but the proper name is Meadville Paranormal Investigation Team.
Yeah, Midnight Watchman's fine. No other surnames or anything attached to it.
Well, because I've been trying to get away from the MPIT, because once I got a message from Michigan Paranormal Society...
Mm-hmm.
It kind of went, yeah, I need to brand this more correctly, so, as you can imagine.
Yeah, there's so many different acronyms out there and whatnot. It's good to separate yourself as much as possible if it's a similar, you know,
right.
Wording.
So, let's talk about, when were the Midnight... easy for you to say. When were the Midnight Watchmen... You're the founder, right?
Yes.
So when did you...
Yes, I'm the founder. Well, basically... The seeds were sown probably since I was 18, but July of 2006, one of the original members, Tony, went out to Gettysburg with his wife at the time, and they got some weird pictures at the Jenny Wade House Museum and Orphanage.
Right.
It caused a little bit of debate between me and her and even him, just what was in the pictures. And basically, you know, me and Tony got to talking and saying, you know, well, it would be fun to investigate this place. You know, we didn't really know how at the time, but... We looked into it a little bit deeper. I got a hold of Joseph Ello, who is the manager of the tour group that runs that. Set up an investigation for November of 07, and we've been doing it ever since, pretty much.
That's funny, because our group got started out of Gettysburg, too, but that's a little... Me and my wife went on a family vacation, and we went to the haunted cellar at the Farmsworth House Inn.
Okay, yes.
And we were, like, there's... Us and my friend who came with us, and there's another couple sitting, like, directly beside us. Or behind us. Behind us, because we were sitting in the front row, and they were right behind us. But, you know, we were turned sideways so we could see them. Because we were just talking, you know, and then the guy came down and started the stories. And we stayed in that general, you know, semi-circle because there was nobody else there. And I was sitting on the far left, so, you know, there was nobody to any direction that way. And my son was just sitting there carrying on talking to things that weren't there.
He wow.
Was 7 months at that time, so it was kind of weird to see him. I mean, full blown attention that way for. Well, the whole guy was. I mean, went 45 minutes an hour. I don't know where he went. And he had dowsing rods, and they started across. And I'm like, hey, okay, so you know, something's going on. I can't, you know, because I've never seen him sit. You know, well, you've got a 7 month old sitting on your lap. You know how long that's going to last before he wants down and wants to tear into things. No matter how good the storyteller is, he's not TV even, so.
Yeah, exactly. Gettysburg, I mean, you probably could do a whole show to people who've, you know, been out to Gettysburg and just the stories that are out there. It's amazing. We go every year for something, case-wise.
I, want to get down there and do some ride broadcasting, but I just haven't put enough effort into it yet.
Yeah, we were thinking about doing the same thing, but what it came down to is the Jenny Waite House and the orphanage. I'm not sure if they have the internet connection available for that. It's just something we haven't looked into enough to kind of do it, but I think it'd be fun. I really do.
I mean, there's a whole. I mean, there's always a collection of, people that you could grab and just run a mic in front of them and make them answer some questions. So
that's true.
We try talk about perils of doing a live investigation. Not to bring this up, but my group decided we wanted to do one. We're going to Ustream it, and I was going to sit and talk to the people in the chat, and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we got it all set up, and the client said, "Sure, whatever, just do what you know." I get there, flip the computer open, start, connecting everything, and the internet connection goes away. I say to the client, "What's going on?" And they're like, "I don't know." And we look at the router; it's not blinking.
Technology is not always your friend on investigations, that's for sure.
Okay, so we unplug it and replug. No, it just totally took a crap like 5 minutes after I got there. I'm like, "Well, maybe I can do this off my cell phone." No, that wasn't happening.
I found the more you rely on technology directly in an investigation, the more it's probably going to fail you at some point. It's amazing.
That leads me to one of my default questions that I like to ask people. What's your favorite piece of equipment when you're investigating?
Favorite piece? That's kind of a tough one. Pretty much I would say is the audio recorder, just to capture what's going on. Because the K2s are fun, but they're not an end-all unless you have, the proper equipment to verify what you're getting.
Right.
And what I mean by that, just that people clear with me, is, K2s pick up RF and EMF. So if you don't have another piece to verify the other two, you're not really sure what you're getting. And that's the biggest problem with the K2 I have. Though they do come in handy, that's for sure.
Are you a still, or do you take any pictures, still or video guy, or you just leave that to tripods and other people?
Pictures I'll take a lot. Video, I try not to do, because honestly, I get too sidetracked with the environment, and the video is probably worthless rather than facing down at the ground.
Yeah, that's... I tried doing the handheld thing one night, and I watched it back, and I'm like, I should send this to Hollywood, and we could have made Boiler Witch 2.
Definitely. I mean... we were at Eastern State, and I looked. I basically, the video footage I took, you might as well just thrown out. It's just us walking with the camera down at the ground, and I'm probably looking around at stuff up and high, and that's just not my thing. Pictures are easy, EP work, audio is easy, but when it comes to video like that, that's not my specialty, that's for sure.
Can I ask you about the flashlight when people have it, they want people to, the spirits to turn it on and off? What do you think about that? Have you done that? Have you experimented with it? Know anything about it?
I think it's an interesting idea. We kind of tried it once, but most of the flashlights we have aren't really... I don't think it would be easy to switch. The switch is a little bit more rougher, so I can't say that it would be easy for a spirit to do it. We have tried it. No success.
Yeah, it cracks me up, because I've seen some people where it almost looks fake.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a spirit here? Ding, light turns on. And then I've seen other videos where it's like, is there a spirit with us? And then it's like a 4-minute video clip, and you click, you're watching it, and you're watching it, and about 3 minutes and 57 seconds in, it finally turns on really dim. I'm like, no, sorry. At that point, it's just a waste of my time. That's not anything spirit activity.
Definitely. I mean, I think I look at, I don't know if you've ever seen Haunted Hoax. I think it's Patrick O'Doyle. Mm. Patrick Doyle.
I can't say I have.
But I don't know if he's still doing Haunted Hoax or not anymore, but basically what he did is he showed how a lot of the stuff that was on TV could be done other ways. Not saying that people are faking it, but just showing you other ways. His favorite one was with a flashlight and a wire ran to it that you couldn't see in the dark.
Right.
And just in his pocket, you'd make a connection with his two fingers, that it would light up and light off when you want it. So there's all kinds of ways for people to do things that wouldn't be maybe necessarily honest. But then again, maybe some of these people are having spirit interaction. I mean, it is hard to really say if you're not there to see it yourself.
Right, that's the hardest thing with any evidence, EVPs or anything. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, and I'm very critical with other people's stuff because I don't know enough information about it. And I wish I did, because some of the pictures people have shown me are just, you know, amazingly cool, but there's no info with them besides where they were taken. And yeah, that's not enough.
I always hate when somebody posts one picture.
Yeah.
And they don't give you, like, another shot of the same environment so I can see what is actually there. Like, if there's that big shadow, I want to see another picture without the shadow so I can judge what's going on. I don't know. It's just me.
That's the thing. I mean, I think as investigators, too, we want to see all the other pictures. Why some people just go, oh, that's a ghost, that's cool, and that's not necessarily what it is. Especially digital cameras. I mean, they have so many, you know, the auto options themselves probably can account for a lot of the weird things in the pictures, but there's no easy way to prove, you know, ghost or, you know, camera malfunction.
No. Well, even some cameras will process them out.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Fuji camera that I never had an orb, dust or other, and I'm like, because my Kodak camera, I'd get them all the time, and, you know, like, where do they go? Well,
yes,
I started digging into the processor stuff, information on the camera, and it was set to take out imperfections in the, you know, within a certain frequency range or size range. It was set to, you know, overpixelate them out of the picture.
Huh.
And I'm like, well, doesn't that just suck? Because we were talking about orbs earlier. I'm not a huge believer in them, but I do like to see them occasionally.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't get them too often in the pictures anymore, and if I do, I kind of ignore them. But, excuse me, it is amazing that the orb debate itself, I think, you know.
Yeah, it's that's why the genesis of the show is how the investigation has changed your life. And I don't want to sit and drum up the whole investigation thing, but it's amazing the process, because as I've been digging through the show, you find the fresh people that believe everything.
Mm-hmm.
The knocking noises. They don't, you know, they don't think it's the furnace. They think it's spirit activity. And then there's that first step where, well, maybe orbs are dust. And then, you know, you travel down the road a little bit, and then you get to that point where you know too much. Nothing's paranormal anymore. And you're sitting there going, it's no fun anymore. Then you start, you know, and then you start, but you still believe there's something out there. But you don't believe anything anybody tells you anymore.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, not to go too much more in the orbs either there, Jim, but I will say my biggest thing I tell my group basically is unless you see an orb with your own eyes, you know, without a flash or anything, you know, free-flowing light, I don't have any faith in it. And I will say at the OBR, I did see a orb with my own eyes. And, of course, it's not on our DVR system, though.
Yeah, okay. It's not on the picture, though, but...
Nope, so that's a nice personal experience, but nothing I can show people, because you just have me have a confused look on my face on the DVR, and that's about it.
Well,
so
that's always price.
it is. Actually, it's kind of funny, because the video shows me spotting it, being confused about what I just saw, and then me and the other guy debating what it was. And that's all the video shows. It doesn't show what we're talking about. So, but that's kind of the nature of the paranormal beast, though. You're not always sure.
Yeah, even if you did have a definitive moment of whatever, like a shadow person walking through, unless you had, I don't know, 8 cameras on it from a whole, you know, 2 recorders, 8 cameras.
And even then, you may still get nothing.
Yeah, I mean, but if you could, like, plan it out so it happened, you had all this equipment on it, you know, everything you could find, somebody would still say, yeah, they faked it.
Yep, some way. Even if you could show every angle, you're always going to have those naysayers out there that, you know, whatever's not true. Unless they're on a case and see it themselves, and that's probably the only way they're going to, you know, change their tune. But even then, that's not a guarantee.
No. That's what I tell people. They want to know. They're always skeptical, and they're like, I want to believe. I hate the people that come to me and say, I want to believe in ghosts, but I don't know how. What do you want me to tell you? You got to have an experience. Well, I want one. I'm like, well, you want it too much. Just stop.
Yeah, I've had a few members say the same thing, and I just said it's going to happen when it's going to happen, you know, and don't think about it too much. Just go out, investigate, see what happens, and that's the best thing I think to do. Try not to go with too many preconceived notions.
I mean, there's a lot of... Hold on. I guess this is probably a loaded question. Do you investigate cemeteries?
I have. I try not to for the most part. Not so much because we don't get anything. I think it's good training ground, but because a lot of cemeteries, it's hard to really tell if you're legally allowed in there at certain times.
Right.
And I try not to get, law enforcement too upset, possibly.
Yeah, that's what people, my backyard does the same thing. And it's, I know I'm allowed back there, so. But what my question to those groups that are hell-bent on doing it all the time, like, I know there's a number of them that are going to be out on Halloween, I'm just like, oh, just stop. I'm just unliking you now. But anyways, that's a personal opinion. But they're the same places that want to go into haunted houses and stuff. And I'm like, so you believe the spirit stays at the cemetery and goes somewhere else? What? I can't understand.
If
I was a spirit and I had free will of the world, last place I'm going to be standing is the cemetery.
Yeah, exactly. Why would you want to be there? I mean, there's so many other places you would, even as a person. I mean, I would think that if you passed away, anybody, you would either be at your own home, a relative, something that meant something to you, not some random cemetery that's, around.
I mean, somewhere that has music and good times. I mean,
exactly. Something
I guess
fun.
Some people say you can summon, if you stand on somebody's grave, you can summon them there. I'm like, yeah, but if you really think hard enough, you can do it elsewhere. I guess my big fear about it is I trip and break somebody's stone or break something, break myself on their stone.
That too. You definitely don't want to. Cemeteries are probably one of the best / worst cases of possibility of damage to yourself, others out there, because every cemetery is in different states of disarray, and some are in good shape. Small headstones, big headstones, animals.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's the one. It's not the biggest headstones that bother me. It's those little row markers, I guess they are, or foot markers that only come up about an inch out of the ground sometimes.
Yeah, you can barely see them till you're
right up over top of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're always seem to be close to a big sharp. Well, not sharp, but you know what I'm talking about. One of those ones
exactly.
That aren't smooth cut or smooth ground out.
Exactly. Yep. I mean, the I'll tell you the only thing we've ever caught in a cemetery is skunks and groundhogs. That's about it. Yeah, there's nothing else we've gotten evidence wise ever doing it.
I don't want to throw this guy too far under the bus, so I won't mention his name. But he showed me this picture of a cemetery, and I'm like, he's like, look at the spirit. I'm like, where'd you take that at? Because it was really this white, it looked pretty, convincing. I've never seen anything that looked like that, He's like, oh, the cemetery, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, hey, that's on my way home. I want to stop and, I don't investigate cemeteries, but it was daylight, so I just wanted to check, that whole, I want to see another picture, so, I'm going to, recreate it in my mind. I get there to the spot that he told me, and 10 feet in front of me is this big white stone. One of those Marys or, I'm not sure, but one of those, I'm like, I'm standing there going, it was a little blurry because it was night and he didn't have the flash on, but it was, like 10 feet away from him. So it still would have showed up just a little, with the flashlight, just enough light then, like.
Yeah, that's, like you said earlier, the environment can definitely affect pictures majorly, and it's nice to see the other angles if you have them.
Yeah, it's just like, dude. So I found them on Facebook later, and I said, you need to go back out to that cemetery before you show anybody else that picture. And he's like, why? I'm like, I'm not telling you why. You just need to go out there and tell me where you were at and take another picture, and then you'll see. And I haven't heard from him since, so.
And that's kind of the norm sometimes. I mean, like, I've been trying to teach some of the newer members of my group that, you may think that I'm kind of just slave driving you to do certain things, but there's reasons why we kind of take extra pictures, why we do take, so many audios and so many video. It's good to cover the area, exactly what's going on without, having 1,000 people around.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm close enough to halfway through. You're listening to the Mallard Report here on the Shark Radio Network. My guest tonight is John Fowler, right?
Yes.
I hate people's last names because my last name isn't easy to pronounce either. So it always worries me.
That's usually why on the website I just go by Cedric, just because that's my middle name. It's a lot simpler, and we have other Johns in the group. So.
Oh, okay, I was wondering where that came from, but I never.
Yep.
It didn't ever bother me, so you know.
So yeah, everybody always.
Talk about your website, since smooth transition, radio host guy. you have the paranormal Q&A. Is that the correct title for that?
Yeah, I believe that's the correct title. Basically, it was our idea to come up with to share some other groups on our website and also promote ourselves a little bit in the meantime. Basically, just a little Q&A, 10-question thing with groups, group founders, members, other people in the paranormal community.
I know. I've done one. That was – when was that? That was months ago, huh? Almost a year
ago? Yeah, a couple months ago, to say the least. I'm not sure of the exact date.
So keep reading them until you find it.
The good thing is, the way I have the website set up, at least you can search for that. So it makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, well, I'll have to search it up for when I post the show review that I do for the show. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool because I give a quote from you and then a quote from me, and then I put your links up, and then I put the video link or video embedded, depends on how things like me that night when I put it together. So. And that way, definitely. If anybody ever wants to see what somebody thought of my show, they can go check it out and check out the show. Not that... I don't know. Anyways. I do love doing this. I'm trying to convince myself, though.
Well, this is the first radio interview I had, so I can't really say much either way right now.
Well, that's good news. No, but I thought it was important when I first started to do this to get my friends some exposure. First off. Because I did a radio interview last year, was it 2 or 3 days? Well, either way, it was 2 or 3 days before Halloween on Real Radio. And I went in there, you know, in the studio there. I was confident, and then that big on-air light turned on. And, yeah, I'm glad my wife was with me because I don't remember saying much.
That was me when we did a college lecture about, 6 months ago now, I guess it was. Never talked in front of that many people before in my life. And there we are, you know, me front and center staring at this large group of students just going, oh, crap. You know, and then, but I, you know, once I got talking about paranormal, it's something I know. So, you know, I kind of got in a zone, but definitely a challenging experience. A lot of the other members of the group that were sitting there were scared, to say the least.
Yeah, it's a different format. And at least this way, you're in the comfort of your home, but you still get to talk what you want to know. So it's a good. And plus, it's all on the internet afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And people anywhere can hear it, too, which is always a good thing.
Usually, anyway. It is amazing, so, though. People can hear it.
Normal, you know what I'm saying? Compared to being on the local AM stations, and I'm pretty sure nobody heard. People told
Very
me
true.
Heard it, and then I asked them what I said, and they had no idea, so. One of those deals. And then I'm like, you live too far away, because I tried listening to the station, because I live a little bit the distance away from where we were interviewed at, and I'm like, you live too far away, because I was going to tune in the whole way there and barely go. But it is what it is. So let's talk about Saxbridge for a minute. We were talking about Gettysburg earlier. We're back. What captures your imagination about Saxbridge?
Imagination. I only heard a few stories about Saxbridge, and we kind of got to the point where we heard a lot of stories. We went out. As for covered bridges in general, I just think a lot of them are the same stories, unfortunately, and they're hard to tell which ones are really the ones that originated from. They all have a horse thieves or somebody hung or a baby thrown off the side or something along those lines. I mean, in my area here, Bucks County, there's probably hundreds of covered bridges, and almost all of them, if you talk to somebody, have the same story.
Right.
It just depends who you're talking to and what area you're talking into them. So, as for Saks, historically, it's definitely an older bridge. It's moved out. It's a good tourist trap in a way there, but I'm not sure if anything captures my imagination so much. To be honest, it's a covered bridge. I mean, that's all I can really say.
It is a nice one, though. I mean, it is definitely a tourist. It's kind of a tourist trap. There's not, I mean, when I got out there, I was expecting there to be this gift shop right across from it, but there isn't.
No, it is nicely hidden for, you know, scenic view for the walks and stuff. I will give it that. It's not in the middle of town like a lot of the other ones.
Yeah, I was kind of waiting for the... And when I was out there, there was this couple, older couple, well, not older couple, but middle-aged couple, I guess, to be polite, said, this bridge is nice, but, I mean, this is the, you know, this is the bridge, but if you want to go somewhere that's actually haunted, walk down around the road, the path there, the one across from where you park at, and go up, and you'll pass the old, one of the old hospitals, you keep going, and then there's this old metal bridge, and that's where all the activity is. So being fearless, I walked a mile and a half one direction to get over there and walk across that bridge, and I'm like, I'm not sure why I walked here, but it was a nice walk, and I got to, you know, see the old one of the old hospitals and meet some interesting people along the way. They're that are, you know, residents of Gettysburg, so it was interesting to hear some of their stories, but I don't know if the other bridge was any more haunted than this Axe Bridge or not. But like I said, it was a good trip, at least.
Oh, yeah, Gettysburg is a beautiful area. Like I said, we go out every year. There's never been a dull moment we go out there for fun or history at all.
Yeah, was it last year or the year before? Last year, we took the team there, took our families, as a learning experience for the kids. That's what we kept convincing ourselves that it was.
Well, I've been out to Gettysburg probably 5 or 6 years in a row. And I tell you what, I'm still finding new parts of that park that I've never seen before. And I think that's pretty cool in its own right.
Yeah, that's a massive. I mean, I get stuck in Devil's Den every time I go down there. And just stay there. I can't leave. I don't know why. Just drawn to it like a bug to a bug zapper. So people tell me I need to get up and visit the wheat field and all this other stuff, and I'm like, no, I'd just rather go to Devil's Den and hang out and sit on the rock for a while and just...
The wheat field has a unique energy at times, but they... That's actually... Have you ever seen the video from the wheat field that they had? I forget which show had it on. I guess it was Sightings at the time, years ago, and it's probably been on a few other shows of the shadows moving through the...
Yeah, I did see the voice. Okay, yeah, I did.
Yeah, and that's... once you've been there and kind of see where that angle was, it's kind of a cool thing that it's not easily faked, at least from my perceptions of it. I mean, I could be wrong since I don't have the original video to match it 100% up, but...
So where's the place in Gettysburg that catches you when you're there, not doing something?
Well, in general, I believe going out there, the field itself has a lot of energy that drags me out to different parts of it. Pickett's Charge is always, I enjoyed myself. But then again, I had an experience there myself, one of the first times I was there as an adult. So that kind of always drags me back. I had a camera smacked out of my hand while trying to take a picture.
Yeah, it'd probably drag you back to the same place once in a while.
Yeah, and I mean that, and then of course Jenny Wade House, where we did our first investigation, always is a favorite of mine just to visit because that's where we started. And then the orphanage across the street / Soldiers Museum is kind of where we opened our, at least I opened my mind up to more things besides just the science end of it, like the psychic end and, you know, those type of people.
That's an interesting question. So. Or interesting thought, because I try my best to be scientific, but it always seems that I'm trusting my gut more than I want to. I know.
I'm in the same boat there. So you try to be scientific, you know, use a scientific method, if you will, but in the end, you're still making decisions by, you know, where to place the camera by, you know, a gut, not, you know, a science formula. Where to take pictures, when to take pictures, you know, what questions to ask. And when to ask them, you know, and you're feeling the environment as you're doing that, which you can't really, you can take temp readings and stuff, but that's not quite the same as what you're going off of, though. At least I don't think, anyway.
No. Here, this is another one of these moments that people are going to love me. MallardReport@gmail.com. Right. See, notice I'm prepping this because I went as far to wear a mood ring on an investigation one night. Just to see how, like, if, you know, because it did change colors a couple different times tonight, you know, I was just wondering, you know, how it related, you know, because people, I'm not even sure if mood ring works. I guess it measures blood pressure or something, but it was just interesting to watch throughout the course of the night.
Well, it's just like the debate between that people have over, you know, Ouija boards versus... I should say Ouija boards versus something. Ouija boards in general are negative or bad. And the one thing my one member brought up is, well, when you go into a place and you use an ovulus or anything else like that, you're kind of the same deal. You're not really in control of what you're bringing in.
Yeah,
you're just
contacting. If you're here tonight and you're using something, a Ouija board, an ovulus, dowsing rods, pendulum, flashlight, whatever. I mean, even a recorder. You're asking and you're expecting an answer, so.
No. Yeah, I just think some people just you know, Ouija boards, I'm not going to say they have a bad rap, but they definitely have the negative, you know, end of things.
Is that because more people can get their hands on them? Like, well, it's just useless to tell me because it's what it is. And start dabbling with stuff they really don't understand or want to know about. Just want to have this, well, we were talking about this a few minutes ago, that paranormal experience. They want to have that ghost story. So they start lighting candles and cracking the Ouija board open. Is that where that comes from? Because it's a lot easier to get a Ouija board than it is the side of the dowsing rods or a pendulum or...
It might be. But then again, nowadays a lot of the technology stuff is easy to get a hold of. It's just a matter of how it's used. And I guess a Ouija board is always going to be the quote-unquote simplest way to communicate with a spirit, you know, quote unquote.
I don't like it because it makes me want to. It has to make me spell. I'm not a good speller, so Ouija board does nothing for me. I know that's weird.
Yeah. Well, I understand now. You've seen me, you know, chat with you in text. You see how bad that is. So I can't say anything there. But
yeah, it's just like, it just always cracks me up because it's just one of those things, I guess. So now we got 20 minutes left. I guess we're not winding down, but now's when I get into my. So from when you started your team in 2007 to now, besides not having any more free time, how has your life changed just because you're an investigator?
Well, I'll say before I started investigating, I definitely was not one to do like things like this with the radio interviews. I probably would have been turned it down flat out. Even though I knew the subject, I guess the confidence wasn't there. More introverted. And since then, I mean, I've done now a radio interview now. I've spoken in front of people at a college, no less.
And no pressure there, right?
Yeah, none. No, just a bunch of people. Basically, the teacher told us, you know, they'll be asking you questions, trying to, you know, challenge you. And I'm like, oh, great, you know, fun. But it was a good event, though, so I can't complain about that. Basically, I was an introvert a lot more before, and now I'm more out, I guess. I shouldn't say I'm out there. I guess that sounds bad, but...
But you are.
Yeah. You know, I'm more out, you know, available for people to see what, you know, who I am, what I'm doing, and all that good stuff, which I never would have been one to do that before. I would have been in the shadows instead of more in the light, I guess.
I understand that completely, because I was the same way, because I would have... Well, there was a time that I wouldn't even wear my team hat in public, and then I started doing that. And then I started, you know, people would start asking questions, and I'd actually start answering them, and, you know, then I'd be getting comfortable, and I'd start asking people the questions instead of them asking me, and now I guess it's just devolved into this. Not evolved, devolved. Yeah. Making a clear distinction there, but so as a team founder, and I'm one too. So let's talk about that end of things. So I hope you're gonna agree with me. There's enough teams in the world right now.
I would think so. Yes, too many probably, to be honest. But
well,
not knocking anybody, but you know, there's only so many places you can go and do.
Yes, and there's only so many names, and only so—I mean, there's only so many people interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I like to ask this question anyways, just because if you were going to give somebody that came to you advice about wanting to start their own team, besides not do it, because that's my advice often. I mean, people don't realize how much
work
it is being the guy in charge. But what would your advice be?
Basically, if you're going to start a group, you'd be aware of all the challenges that are in front of you, mostly like the review phase of it. I mean, you're going to have to put, you know, a good amount of hours in just reviewing wherever you've been. Whether you have one recorder or 20, it doesn't really matter. You still have to review that whole recorder from a place. You know, you have to talk to people to get into places that are, you know, none. More than likely, yeah, either don't want you in there or aren't sure who you are. It is an uphill battle to start, to say the least. You don't have a name recognition unless you have places from friends or family that you can get into to kind of build a little bit of a
brand name, whatever you want.
Brand history, you know, to show people. It's going to be a little bit of an uphill battle, to say the least. You're going to get turned down. You're going to have people tell you no. They're going to ask for insurance, which insurance is a whole other issue for paranormal investigators. Always comes up one way or another.
Yes.
basically, if you, I always say keep the faith. If this is what you want to do,
then do it.
Do it. And if it's too much for just you to do as a group founder, then go with somebody else that you know you can work with, another friend in the, you know, paranormal world.
Do it with somebody you trust to know before this, though. Don't go out posting on Facebook, I'm looking for a co-founder for my paranormal group.
Exactly.
Yikes.
Exactly.
It scares me every time I see people doing that.
Yeah, because there's too many people out there that have their own agenda. And it's not that I'm going to say it's a negative, but sometimes people aren't on the same page for that. If you have a vision, you know, whatever that is for your group, follow it. You'll, you know, be honest with yourself and people will be honest with you, I hope, in the long run.
Yeah, it's a process. It's not an overnight sensation by any stretch of the imagination.
Not at all. I had somebody from New Jersey who asked that they started their group about the same time I started mine. And when they came to me with questions, they made it sound like, you know, we were so much above them. And I'm thinking, not really. I mean, we got lucky, to be honest, on a lot of our stuff. On that, we got lucky. I mean, we did, our first case was at Jenny Wade in 07. And within a few months of that, the tour company contacted us about a testimonial for their DVD. We were one of the few groups that responded to that. So we were in a DVD with only like three cases under our belts. That's luck. That's not, I'm not going to say that's skill. That's just dumb luck.
Well, that's a big part of it, though.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of, okay, so we talked about time, reviewing stuff. You do a 4-hour investigation with four recorders. So that's 16 hours at least.
Yeah, at a minimum.
Coming back through. Well, I say 32 because somebody else has to listen to it. Plus any pictures, any video. So you're at 100, we'll say 100 hours for a 4-hour investigation somewhere. I mean, 4 hours, you hear people investigating all night. You know?
I've done that, yeah. That's a pain to review, to say the least.
I'm like, so our 4-hour investigation just turned into 100 hours. So you times it by 12 because you were there for 12 hours, so that's 300 hours, something like that.
And that's...
Yeah. And that's... Well, that's a fair number.
Yeah, and that's why I said that's beyond your, you know, your work schedule or your family schedule, whatever. You're fitting it in with your group. And if you only have, like, a few people reviewing, that's an eternity before you can get to a next case.
Yeah, that's okay. You know? Yeah, it's just one of those things. I mean, how many people are in your group right now, actually? That was one of my default questions that I skipped out on.
I do believe we have 8 full-time members at this point and a few other
part-time
reserve members.
That's a fair number.
If I get everybody out, yeah, that is a fair number. It's, you know, balancing schedules is a challenge.
It is, yeah, there's always that, too. Okay, so we talked about time. Now the other tricky part, which, I mean, you don't have to go too far into this, but there's that money thing, too, that people want.
Yeah, money is definitely always an issue with, I think, paranormal groups, mostly because equipment's not cheap. And then beyond that fact, a lot of the places that people want to investigate aren't free either. You're going to have to pay something to get there.
Yeah, I mean, even if the place is free, you've got gas money, getting there, unless it's your own house.
And then also you have other places that, it, you know, you may have to take time off work too, depending on their scheduling. Like a lot of bars, you know, either doing it 3 a.m. or you're doing it, you know, early in the morning. You're not going to get in, you know, a 9 to 5 when they're open.
Right. So there, yeah, there, and then there, okay. So the other end of money things, you've got your equipment, and you've always got batteries.
Yeah. Gonna need them, or you're not getting far. That's for sure.
And, the, and then you got business cards and team shirts and websites and.
Yeah, we do a dues system that'll cover the website and a little bit extra. Thankfully, people pick up batteries, you know, kind of in a circle here. One person buys it 1 month, you know, next person buys whatever we need the next. It's worked out pretty good, but there's definitely an expense that most people don't think about with this.
Right. All that fun stuff. So now we've got 10 minutes left, because I'm doing a pretty good job of keeping track of myself tonight. The first night, I was just sitting there watching the green bar, the voices jumping back and forth, and that was it. I was like a deer in the headlights. And then a few weeks later, it got to the point where I could actually look over the chat room and see what was going on. But there was like 4 people in there, but I thought it was going like 100 miles an hour. You know, and then I got to look at the time because I can't, you know. Well, at that point, I had a show right after me, so I was always conscious, you know, like over. It was like 15 minutes into the show, and I'm like glued to the clock then, so. So now I'm trying to get back to micromanaging everything to that point. So, with 10 minutes left, let's talk about the reveal going on one more time. So people, well, maybe if anybody's actually out there listening.
Yeah, I hope so, but you never know. It's a strange world we live in, that's for sure. But the reveal is at the OBR Hotel, Old Bethlehem Road Hotel in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, this Thursday, the 27th. I believe we're going to be there from 5 to about 10, and the reveals are going to be at 7 and 8, I want to say. I'm not sure on my notes in front of me, but it's something along those lines. And we'll just have a little Q&A along with that, hopefully. I'm not sure who's going to show up. We have a Facebook event on our page, Midnight Watchmen. Hopefully some people will show up and, you know, have a good time there.
Yeah, you never know. We've had the spark back in August, and it seemed like there was millions of people going to come, and not millions showed up. So, you never know. Hopefully, your event's the other way. You see a low number on your Facebook page, and it doubles or triples the people actually show up. So,
well, we have a lot of maybes, which is, to me, I hate that. I'd rather see yes or no's than maybes, because at least you kind of have a better idea yes or no's.
Yeah.
But it's all right. I'm pushing as best I can, and hopefully some people show up.
It's all you can do is push it.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk. Well, we talked about the blog, but the site's what, midnightwatchman.com, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's correct, midnightwatchman.com.
And you have the blog there and case files and a whole sort of other things that I'm forgetting right now because I don't have it up.
Yeah, we have the I'm almost forgetting it myself, and I built the site. We have a members page there. We have EVPs, videos, pictures. Some editorial articles that were written. The Q&As, of course, that we mentioned earlier, different groups. And probably a couple other things I'm just not thinking about myself right now. But
a little contact page in case you need to get a hold of them. They're from, I didn't even mention this earlier, you're from, you said Bucks County?
Yes, Bucks County. I'm located in Perkasie, which is probably not known by many people who are probably listening to this, to say the least. But we're about 45 minutes out of Philly and about a half hour or so out of Allentown, between some two bigger cities. So
you're smack there in the middle, so at least you have an opportunity to get to somewhere.
Yep, even though there's a ton of groups in Philly, we're kind of in an area where there isn't a lot of, I don't want to use the term professional because I think that's kind of insulting, but to other groups, but we're probably the most organized out of between the two.
Yeah, and I follow what you're saying, yeah.
Because there's tons of people that go out and do this. It's just whether or not they're considered professional or organized or whatever the verbiage you want to, you know, call it is.
Put together, straight in the head.
Yeah, exactly.
That stuff's going to get me in trouble, isn't it? But anyways.
Yeah, I'm trying to be politically correct, at least.
You can be. You're the guest. You should be the one that isn't, and I should be the one that is. I think it's too late for that. So we're almost, we're winding down here. I want to ask you about the Paranormal Challenge.
Hot button. The TV show. The TV show, yes. Okay.
Have you seen it?
I've seen, I believe, 1.5 episodes.
I'm guessing by the half of the episode, I know where this next question is going to go, but I'll ask it anyways. Are you a fan?
I think the idea is good. I think the way it's presented and shown is not. I think two groups kind of competing, you know, is a good thing, but the way they're displaying it, I don't like. I mean, it basically looks like, and again, I don't know exactly how long they're at these places because I'm not there myself. This goes back to, like I was saying earlier about evidence, you're not there to see necessarily what's really going on, but it looks like they're there for 2 hours trying to get the best evidence. That's not always the way it's going to work, you know. And like some of the equipment ideas that they have on there, not everybody uses everything that they're showing on the show because there's no standard. We don't have a standard in practices for paranormal investigators. Everybody kind of does their own thing in their own way, good or bad.
It'd be tough for me to go in somewhere that like one of these major investigation sites with different equipment and production people, as much as they don't want to say it, you know they're there. Trying to point and shoot and make me want to, you know, I can't see that being any kind of investigation that I'd want to put my name onto.
Yeah, and my biggest thing was, I don't know if it was the first or second episode, and it was the one with the women versus the men.
Oh,
and
well,
I think
the first one.
I don't know, I just looked at the way the judges, who are supposedly experts, you know, well, judged everything.
There's no such thing.
Yeah, and I just looked at that and I just went, okay, You have people judging that really don't have a consensus on anything, you know, and they change the judges out all the time. So how do you really have a I don't want to say, I guess a fair challenge would be what it is. Because your aspects of it would change week to week, depending who's there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand how you could score it and then how to choose a winner out of it. I mean, if you were giving them their own equipment and a full night by themselves in the building, maybe I could follow it a little bit closer.
I would love to be able to see that. I mean, especially in being judged on names of stuff, to me, is like equipment wise, it's kind of dumb. If you know what the equipment does and you can use it, who cares if you're calling it a, you know, thingy or a K2 meter? You know, as long as you know how to use it and know what it is, that really shouldn't matter. Especially if you're capturing evidence that you can, you know, not debunk yourself. You know, you're showing those skills. At least that's what I think, anyway. But
yeah, I'm gonna agree with you on this. I personally don't like any of the shows. Do you like any of them?
I think I used to like Ghost Hunters, but then now I'm doing my own thing. I kind of can't stand watching it because I know how edited it is. Right. Obviously, to fit that down into an hour or whatever it is, 45 minutes on, you know, TV, it's going to be missing stuff. And some other issues with that I don't really want to get into now, but I kind of got away from that. Ghost Adventures I like just because I think it's entertaining.
Not as a practical how-to video to investigate, though, right?
No, not at all. Just entertainment, pure and simple.
Because I love these groups that you watch a clip of their investigation, and there's that one guy who thinks he's Zach.
Well, that's why I got a kick out of, I believe it was that first episode, that one team. And I do have them as friends on Facebook, so I'm not knocking him. But all I could think was, this guy's acting like Zach. I don't know if that's his normal personality or not, because obviously I never met the guy before. But just thinking, okay.
Well, I've seen a video of those, and I'm not knocking them either. I've seen a video of them before they were on the show, and they were the same way.
And that's why I said I try not to make, you know,
so
assumptions.
So it wasn't like an act for the show. I mean, that's how they investigate, so I at least know that much.
Yeah, and that's good to note then, too. I mean, they're nice guys. I've talked to them. I think most of them at least once or twice, you know. And so I have no problem with anybody who's even on the show. I just don't like the way the show was designed, I guess you could say.
Yeah, presented. I agree with you. It is what it is, I mean.
I think, like I said, the concept's definitely solid. I think it's fun to get groups competing.
I don't know how it'd work, but instead of competing against each other, how about we, I don't know, switch them around, for the lack of a better verb or knowledge at this point, and put two investigators from one team and two from another, and see how that turns out.
I think depending on the groups, I think that'd be very interesting. Whether it's in a good way or bad way, I think it'd be very interesting.
It'd be drama filled. Well, not wouldn't be Jersey Shore drama filled. I'm pretty sure. Maybe
it could be. Well, it could be depending, I guess, on people's personalities. But I mean, most of the people I've worked with, I've found that. Like, someone's telling me no provoking, and I'll just be very direct, and they're like, oh, you're provoking, and I'm like, no, I'm just being direct. I'm like, you've never heard me provoke. It's, you know, it just depends on how you, you know, handle yourself.
I come across very sarcastic, and people think I'm provoking.
And sometimes I try things. Yeah. I try things. Like, we were at Fort Mifflin, and I was doing EVP session with another group, and I kind of tried more of a trigger object than a provoking by almost turning myself into like a sergeant asking for a soldier.
Right.
Wasn't commanding him to do anything, but I was just very forceful in how I said it, but that's not to me provoking. It's not like I demanded they show themselves.
Right.
That's a whole nother story, I believe. So I usually leave that to other members of the group. I try to be a nice cop.
does that work out for evidence?
Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, we did in the orphanage in Gettysburg. I guess I get loose my one member on Rosa, who is supposedly the one spirit that's down there, the former headmistress. She used to be very cruel to children, and she's supposedly a Christian, which obviously
doesn't align with each other.
No, it doesn't align well. My one friend, Mr. Cannon, in the group, he is religious background, you know, and I was pretty much, he's our provoker. I let him just attack the spirits. That's kind of what I let him do. Because he always has a good thought process on it. He used the Bible to basically smack her down. And we joked to this day, our tour guide, a close friend of mine, she was a tour guide that night. She always tells us that we know we've banned Bibles in Gettysburg because of that night. And because no one ever did that before. And the medium that was working with the company at the time, she called and... And the first thing out of the medium's mouth was, what did they do? And immediately, I'm just like, well, I guess that's a good sign that she's picking up something like that. And apparently, we did put Rosa in her place, because when we came back from a dinner break, the temp had risen about 20 degrees, and every K2 meter was going crazy down in that basement like I've never seen before.
All right. Technically, I'm out of show, but I've got a few minutes because my other show ran late and I don't have a show behind me, so.
It's always a good thing.
Yeah. And I'll be getting an email about this later, but that's okay. I like to ask every guest that I have on their final, just give me your final, it doesn't have to be paranormal, just your final thought of whatever you want to put out there for people.
Basically, I think with some of the stuff I talked to people today about in general is if you believe in something, whether it's, you know, paranormal and you want to be an investigator or you want to be a firefighter, whatever you want to be in life, if it's your dream, follow it, you know, and just always do what you think's best to do that. If you really want it and you do what your heart wants and all that, you'll get it. So just follow your dreams.
All right, John, thank you for coming on. I'll talk to you here a minute off air.
All right, well, thank you, Jim.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the Mauer Report on the Shark Radio Network. Have a good night.
Hey, everybody, it's the Mauer Report. It's the moon.